In this episode, some of our Banking with Life clients discuss their exposure to the idea that they could control the banking function with the infinite banking concept and practical experience in becoming your own banker, as taught by my late friend and mentor, R. Nelson Nash. Now, these are unscripted and in their own words, so they may not use precise language, but they took time out of their busy lives and their full schedules to come and share with you. And I thought it was very powerful. They were very complimentary of us as a team, the Bank of Life team and some of the team members, you know, Jake, Julie, Service. And I do truly appreciate that. But those were also unsolicited. I really had fun with all of these individuals, and I think that you'll enjoy. Thank you for listening.
You're right. It's been coming up on 3 years, you know, since I've been, you know, a practitioner of the IBC concept and met you. And both of those endeavors have worked very well in my life. So I'm still, you know, excited about, you know, this concept. And I'm, you know, because I'm such a firm believer in it. And as I said from that first broadcast or podcast, the reason that I love the concept so is because I was looking for the concept before I found it. And so it was a natural fit for me. And it's just a positive, powerful financial tool, you know, that is needed, and I think it's worked well for me and my family thus far.
I appreciate that, you saying that and sharing that. It's worked well for me and my family, too, really better than I thought. And going back, you know, I've done this quite a few years, and when I was first exposed, you know, I'm thinking, man, there's something wrong. This is too good to be true, or I've never heard it. And I've been in the life insurance business, you know, 14 years, and I knew it was good. Couldn't really put my finger on it. And, literally for the first probably 4 years, I was looking for the problem, you know, what was going to go wrong? What was wrong? When's a hammer going to fall? You know, kind of a looking over your shoulder, like, just really, not expecting, but I wouldn't have been surprised if there would have been a problem, you know, just kind of looking for the problem, and the problem never appeared. You know, I mean, the problem has always been between my ears. And I'm just saying, I've had the same experience. It's gotten better and better, better than I expected, you know. And what other, you know, financial endeavors do you engage in that continually get better and better? You know,
you know, it's ironic you should say that because, you know, obviously, you know, I spent 37 years working, you know, for the electric distribution company here in Houston. And obviously I was part of participating in 401k process. And so, you look at, James, the stock market today, and, you know, you can kind of see where it is headed south. You look at the banking today.
Oh, yeah. Let me just say that we're recording this on, you know, the 16th of March. And so all of these banks have just, you know, four or five of them have, three of them for sure, and have collapsed. And so I just want to interject that kind of time frame.
Yeah. So, oh, yes. Great point. And so what's so ironic about this, James, is I got received a call yesterday. And as you know, I've got 8 kids. So and so it's my 27-year-old daughter. I mean, yesterday, Wednesday, she calls me and she calls me from work. She's she goes to school. She still goes to school, but she's also works full time as a carrier for USPS. So she's a mail carrier. And so she calls me. She says, she says, Dad, let's talk Silicon. let's talk banking for a second. So I says, okay, let's talk banking. So she says, so I'm out here working hard and trying to do good with my money. She says, where in the world do I, she said, where in the world does a girl go to put her money and it keeps, and it stays safe. You know, she can safely keep her money. And I thought about, you know, all the times, you know, that I still, you know, I said in that first podcast, my family and I, we're still tight knit, and we still have what we call a state of the Whitfield family discussion. So they all come home and we sit down, we have meetings. And I've introduced them to the IBC concept every chance I get. But sometimes, James, it's kind of like you hear, but you don't hear. and so I then begin to say, well, you know, dear, the infinite banking concept that we talk about during our meetings, I said, you know, you can kind of see now where the safety it provides comes in. It's a safeguard, it's guardrails for current situations that we see happening with the banking today, you know. So it's a safe place where you can save your money without being worried about, am I going to lose it? Am I going to lose more this month than last month? Or, you know, those kind of situations. So it's almost like the light bulb went off for her again. She says, oh, yeah, we have been talking about that. You've been mentioning that. And so I began to tell her there again about the IBC process. And if you have money, especially savings, don't, you know, take it out and stick it under a mattress. Don't do that because you're losing. But you should consider the infinite banking concept.
Well, you know, I growing up, I really wasn't exposed to too many money concepts. I mean, I hate to admit it, but I never was even taught how to balance a checkbook. I saw my parents do it. They never really explained how they did it and what they were doing. You know, a lot of things that I learned in the money world, I learned by accident, probably the hard way. And, you know, and I got into the insurance industry, probably late 80s, with a company that was promoting the concept of, you know, buy term and invest the difference. And honestly, for a number of years, you know, up until probably 2-3 years ago, you know, that concept made sense to me. You know, when we were in the industry and we would, you know, look at people's policies, and we would, you know, we would approach it from the standpoint of get the most insurance for the least amount of money, you know, and then you invest the difference in your premiums that you're not paying in some kind of a security that will, you know, grow at a faster rate, you know, hypothetically. The challenge with that is, even with my own experience with buying the term policies and things that were, you know, for those programs, is you run out of insurance at some point and it's done. And, you know, if you got into it because you wanted to get the cheapest amount, the most amount, the cheapest, you probably didn't allot anything for anything over the premium you were paying because you wanted the cheapest. And that's kind of the breakdown of the whole mindset is that, you know, people will buy into these insurance terms, 20-year terms, whatever it is. And then at the end of the year, end of those terms, they got nothing to show for it at all. And like with me, I had nothing. The concepts made sense, but the fact of the matter is we weren't looking at the here and now reality that you know, folks in the money world know about utilizing, you know, specific whole life policies for building wealth right now. Now that I'm on this end of it, because I am in the real estate investing industry too, it makes total sense, and it's just common sense. But why the system never taught us this, you know, coming up through it, it's just mind-boggling. You know, I have my reasons for that, but it's a real shame that it's not more widespread than known. That you can utilize these concepts to, you know, become independent of the system that we're in. And really, you manage the whole deal. You can manage
it. The system cannot teach you. The system that needs you to be dependent cannot teach you to be independent.
Yes.
You know, it can't happen. So, so I want to go back. You grew up in Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Actually, I grew up in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
And then I moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
I lived there for a number of years.
Well, was there some kind of connection? And I don't want to, you know, put words in your mouth, and I don't really ever mention life insurance companies, but I'll make an exception here. Are you talking about A.L. Williams? Is that where you got the training? Yeah. Because I was exposed to that, you know, early in my career, and he worked with the company that I started with when I went into the financial world permanently. In 1991, I went to work with Waddell & Reed, a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah.
And that's what they owned, tons of life insurance companies. They still own them today. They had a mutual fund family. They grew into two, and I think they've sold their mutual fund family. I don't know. I don't really keep up with them. But he worked with them. He was a regional rep with them. And their philosophy was buy term and invest the difference, or whatever it was. It was buy term and invest the rest. I think it was buy term and invest the difference, and then he did buy term and invest the rest, or something like that. So that's the way I got into it, right? And I fully believe that term was the way to go, and the market was always going to go up.
Yeah.
Right. And I know this is not about me, but I'm just saying that, you know, I quickly learned the market didn't always go up. And at that time, I was sitting next to, we were all registered representatives, you know, we all geared up to sell those securities and all that. But I was sitting next to guys who were talking about the, you know, inflationary stagflationary period that they went through, and the oil crisis 71 and 73 and all the market, you know, and I was getting their experiences, you know, secondhand. And I never did really make that connection that, oh, markets don't always go up, you know, but here they were, they were doing the same thing. You know, they believed that mutual funds and the markets were going to the end all to be all, and term was the way to go. So I learned firsthand that the market didn't go all the way up. But also going to work at Waddell & Reed, you know, I'm a green bean, and you know, they give you a whole book of orphan accounts, right? So these orphan accounts are clients that they have that nobody services because there's such a high turnover in the financial services industry, right? So they give you this big old book of orphans, and they say, go get them, you know, Tiger, go sell them something new, right? And I had a lot of conversations with a lot of those clients, and I learned then that we don't necessarily outlive the need for a death benefit. You know, so the fundamental beliefs of this philosophy of buy term and invest the difference, you know, started having cracks in the foundation early in my career. You know, how tell me about your experience with that, you know, A.L. Williams and buy term and invest the difference. You know, how long did you do that? Did you, you know, were you hounding your families or?
Well, I think I was in it for a couple of years, and then I got married and we moved to Phoenix. So I kind of got out of it. But it was one of those deals where, you know, of course, the only focus was on the death benefit. That's it. Yeah. And it was, you know, I looked at a number of people's policies that, we were looking at cash value. You know, we would calculate out, you know, looking at their policies and things like that. And then we basically work up something that, you know, we can get you X amount of death benefit for, you know, half the amount or whatever. But it didn't address any of the right now issues. you know, that we talked about, that, you know, that, that Nelson mentions in his book about becoming independent in the system and, you know, building your own banking system yourself, finance your life. It didn't deal with any of that. No, I did have people along the way that would say, you know, I'm not switching, because they knew something I didn't know, but they never told me what that was. So anyway, that's kind of my experience is, you know, I did run into some folks along the way that they held on to the policies, but they did it because they knew something I didn't know.
I reached out and asking, you know, a lot of the questions everybody's asking. Watched a bunch of videos on your podcasts, and that made me feel like I knew you before I felt like I knew you, you know. So
you got to hear me before I could hear you.
That's true. My journey is, it was a long road. Started about roughly 5 years ago. You know, it takes about a good 6-8 months to vet something thoroughly and to know if you want to bring this into your family, your situation. And, you know, it checked all the boxes. I guess it all, you know, started from when I had a great childhood growing up, and I lost my dad when I was 12 years old. So that was something that I had to come to grips with and all that. But, you know, me and my family, we made it through everything, and life insurance was a big deal at that time to get us, you know, to where it didn't interrupt life as much as it could have. And maybe that's where the value of life insurance, you know, a lot of people hear life insurance and that scares them away. But for my situation, that wasn't the case.
I would think you might not have been aware as a 12-year-old young man that your dad had life insurance. I mean, were you aware of that, or did you find out later that made a difference in y'all's life? Or
to know that, you know, the pressure of money and all that was never a factor. But once I come, you know, maybe 14, 15, got a little older, noticed that, you know, nothing had really changed. We kept having everything we needed to get by, and it was just a seamless situation that never changed. And come to find out, it was life insurance that was there the whole time. And
that's how I don't recall that. You know, I mean, you know, thanks for sharing that. I don't recall that, but you may have told me in the past. But, you know, I know, like, they came in yesterday. So this Saturday morning, you know, came in on a Cinco de Mayo, traveled over here, right? And, you know, him and his wife came in. And, you know, before people come in, I'm like, I'll pull their file up. You know, he's a friend and he's a client. And, you know, I'm like, well, where's Jamie's policy? You know, just I want to see kind of what's going on so I can speak intelligently. And of course I knew, but I'd forgotten. But then I realized you didn't really have a policy. And I'm like, yeah, yes, he does. Yeah. And somebody else said, no, he doesn't. And somebody else said, yeah, I think he does. And so I'm, you know, I'm just bringing that up that, so at a young age, you know, and tragic, you know, it's hard to hear that. I mean, sorry that you lost your father at such a young age. I mean, what a challenge for a young man. But then you realize that life insurance, I mean, so you realize that not much had changed, but then later you realize that life insurance might have been a part of that. And so did, you know, as a young man, did you, I think you married young kind of. Did you like immediately go out and buy life insurance? Was that part of your thinking, you know, because of your experience as a young man?
Yeah, that when I got married, it was I knew the role my dad played, and I knew I had to step up and be that father figure. You know, once we had kids, we were married, we had to make sure we could live together for, you know, before we have kids,
that's a pretty smart idea. So,
we had our first child after 8 years of being married. So, you know, marrying young, I think you have to learn each other and, you know, make sure your values line up and to make a successful relationship, you know, long-term situation. But I think that was an important part of our life, to where I had always had decent enough jobs to where, you know, had a 401k in place, because that's all I knew at the time. And life insurance, you know, you have a company life insurance, you know, you can max times one, times two, times three
of your salary, right? So they provide some, and then you can buy more than that sometimes. Yeah,
additional. And I knew that was something that I've always maxed out, and
yeah,
just because of my mindset and how I thought.
So you're doing the things that you were doing the things that most everybody else does and is aware of and is presented to them, especially as, you know, an employee. You know, you have the company benefits, and some companies have more than others, but you always maxed out the life insurance. Yeah. When you talk about life insurance and you go through that, you know, do you remember your child? I mean, is that a driving kind of, or is it just there that, you know, you lost your father at a young age and life insurance made a difference, so you're going to make sure that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was a big drive, I guess, was life insurance, knowing how I viewed it versus, you know, you hear people talk negatively about life insurance, and but life insurance, you know, the reputation of it for some people, it can be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And but overall, I mean, I had to get to an age to where it made sense to me and my family that I knew if I wasn't there anymore, they would be taken care of.
Listen, Michael, we've known each other since about Q1 of 2021. I became a client in August 2021. You discovered, though, were exposed to the infinite banking concept, you know, before we ever met.
Yeah, I think it was sometime in 2019, if my memory is correct.
Okay, yeah. So you've been going a couple of years.
It's been 3 years, but I'd say like the evolution of just learning, especially just about just how money works, monetary theory, just the basics of it. I've gotten into the weeds, but just understanding, you know, the flow of money, where it flows from, where it flows to, and how to, you know, how I can have an effect on that.
Yeah, who controls that flow, huh?
On one hand, it's frightening from a couple different, you know, perspectives, but then too, when you start recapturing some of that flow and you realize how powerful you can be in that equation, there's a lot of energy to that, there's a lot of peace to it, I found, especially day to day. I think, you know, I don't remember who I talked to. It was probably on the first podcast and stuff, but I don't really pay attention to the stock market anymore, you know, really at all. I'll casually look at it just to see, you know, if there's panic out in the street, if there's blood out in the street, just because overall that's kind of where opportunities are. But
panic and blood in the streets.
Yeah. That's one that, yeah. I mean, I like to be solutions to people's problems.
Sure.
But that comes with having access to capital and having a place that you've systematically been storing it, which is what the infinite banking concept, since, you know, my learnings began, and then, you know, the saw keeps, continues to be sharpened with you and people like you. It's really refreshing to knowing that you have this war chest that's continuously being built. So it's there's a lot of freedom in that. There's a lot of peace in that.
There's so many, I want to say intangible, but they're really not intangible. There are intangible, but there are many tangible benefits to having access to capital that you control without required approval from anyone. I mean, that's just one benefit, you know. And then the discipline of the systematic accumulation, formation of capital, kind of put a path or direction, a purpose, you know, to your capital, and then that what that requires, you know, you're part of that purpose, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of benefits to that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And speaking of the first podcast, I want to say that you came here and recorded an episode number 96 back in August of 2021, and that was titled "The Surfer, Real Estate Investor, and Peace Officer." So we'll put a link for that one below.
That was fun.
there's a lot that's happened since then.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there has been.
The growth continues. You know,
going back to what you just said about discipline, I think for me personally, and I think if we really spent some time and turned off TVs and things and really listened to ourselves, I think there's a lot of discipline that's just needed in general.
Yeah,
I know Ryan's talked about it, and you guys have discussed it on the podcast before. But I know that's important to me. But just controlling some of, just creating some discipline, there's such an amount of freedom in that, because that's, you know, it's all I have to do is, well, and I didn't do it really anyway, is spend more than I make, but you can always fine tune that process and find, you know, leaks in the dam that you didn't know that you had. But unless you're in a position to where you can listen, you're never going to, you know, isolate and identify those things.
Yeah.
So that's something that I just continue to do. I'm the variable that has the biggest impact on the performance of, you know, my banking system. So I owe that to myself, and I owe that to my nieces, who are the beneficiaries of all this, you know. So I think they would want their uncle to pay a little bit more attention and continue to keep their pulse on what's going on.
Yeah, well, the uncle needs to lead the way and be the example, right? No question about that. And discipline, it's a learned, you know, it's a learned habit. It's a learned thinking through that. And I love what you said, you know, if people just like slow down and listen to themselves, that's a scary, if you don't do that, if you haven't done that, it may seem scary, but that's probably, you know, it's extremely important. My point being is you're a lot smarter than you give yourself credit for. You know,
oh my
you
goodness.
Set aside time to listen to yourself, like he suggested, you'll be thankful that you did.
I like that you give us the ability to make that decision, and you won't just shoot somebody down because I go back to our initial conversation. I came in from the totally wrong perspective, and we still ended up working together, mm-hmm. right? It's like I had it all wrong. And through our conversations, I started to you know, filter out the noise, clear up the fog, and I ended up where I think was the right place for me. Right?
I agree.
You know, the next guy that picked up the phone, maybe he had, it works better for him for an aggressive poly or a less aggressive policy, what have you. But, you know, you took the time to figure out what my needs were. And also helped me talk through and understand that what I thought I wanted or what I wanted was not what I needed. Because if you peel back, well, you want this, why do you want it? And when I explained to you the whole purpose of me trying to get my financial house in order, I said, oh, okay, that's your goal, right? And so we kind of refocused from what I wanted to what I needed to accomplish my true goal, not the front, you know, not the one I thought I needed. So that was very, very different. Because like I said, most other people that I spoke with was just 20 minutes. How much? How long? I'll send you several illustrations, right? Because most of the agents I work with would present me with one company and either different products or different writers or whatever, different iterations of the same one, based on that 20-minute conversation. Did they ask anything about what I was trying to do with the policy? No. How much premium can you pay and for how long? Good enough. I'll send you an illustration in 20 minutes. Yeah. That's how most of my conversations went.
Wow.
And so, you know, going, taking a step back kind of to why I originally even got on this journey to IBC was the challenges I faced throughout my lifetime with what I thought I was supposed to do. My retirement accounts took hits in, you know, 2000 with the dot-com bust, and then 2008 with the recession, and they're taking a hit right now. And so, but all of that was trying to achieve what I was taught, conditioned to be the American dream, right? Family, home, car, retirement, kind of thing like that. And you had a guest on recently, Damascene, that kind of, I mean, he exemplifies the American dream. And as I was watching it, part of it was inspirational, and surprisingly, the other part was like shameful. His story was inspirational. Where he had to start, the challenges, the obstacles, the setbacks he faced, but he succeeded.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's
very inspirational.
Very inspirational. But the shameful part is, what's my problem? what's our problem?
Right.
Right. We didn't have to start in the hole that he did. You know, we're born in, you know, one of the best countries on the planet, and we have so much opportunity here. Yeah. Why can't we accomplish things that like Damascene did? But he touched on why. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he basically said the education system teaches us to be workers.
Yeah.
Right. And when I think about it, it's not just our education system, but society in general molds us into cogs for a machine. That machine is for the enrichment of somebody else, the machine owners, whether it's, you know, Wall Street investments or corporations, whatever.
All of them.
Yeah. We're a cog to drive this machine. So when do I get to be a cog in my own machine? When do I get to have my own machine full of cogs? It's like, here's Damascene with all the disadvantages, with all the obstacles. He's getting there, right? And why don't we do it? And I look back and think about like advertisement. How many times have you seen your life will be much better if you have a new car, right? Your kids will be happier. Your wife will be happier. Your husband, whoever. New car, but don't get this new car the responsible way. Get into debt, right? Because right after they show you this beautiful car, they'll tell you, you know, the first 15 seconds of the commercial are the same. Beautiful car, beautiful series. Then the next one, depending on what interest rates are like, you know, rent or buy now, lease now, they give you the, you know, some terms and conditions that you can buy, you can enjoy it now and pay for it later.
Sure.
That's how I was conditioned, right? I had credit card debt, all kinds of debt. And that kind of hurts, right? It makes it difficult to realize and create your machine to benefit you, you know, with either you as a cog or other cogs generating to the benefit of yourself. And even when you do it right, there are a lot of challenges. The biggest reason I started rethinking what am I going to do about retirement, right? Because the general way of doing things is you work until you retire. Some people, you work until you die, right? But you work until you retire. Retire with what? What am I supposed to do when I retire? How am I supposed to maintain myself, right? Oh, that's easy. Retirement plan, right? Okay, well, how is that working out for people? Majority of people, I forget the exact percentage, are forced to raid their retirement account before it's time. Medical emergency, whatever. Life happens. And you end up raiding it. Most people don't save enough in the first place.
Well, I don't know where to start. So we'll just kind of keep it with the realms of what we're talking about.
He's born on the other side of the tracks in
Mississippi. We were, well, you know, we're West Coasties. Well, not really. Lori's a Phoenix girl, and I was born in the South Bay of San Francisco near Santa Clara, San Jose area. And, you know, we've traveled a bit. We've done a few things, been a few places, but we ended up in North Carolina, you know. And one of the things that I would characterize our one of the big things is trying to make some money, trying to save, trying to kind of sort of be really good stewards of what we've had. And we've had, you know, we've done really well with some stuff. But one of the big things for me in looking into all this was the fact that, and we just talked about it, was the market, the 401k stuff, all this Wall Street stuff is, you kind of get forced down it. And it has let us down a couple times big. And, you know, for years, I just kept looking, there's got to be a better thing, you know? There's got to be a better place to put our money, because basically what you're doing is you're just trusting that some dude in Wall Street is looking out for you, you know?
Yeah, right.
but, you know, no, he's looking out for him and his thing. And by default, you get part of it, maybe, you know? So, you know, they get your money coming in fees, and they get your money going out. You know, it's not a win-win for the consumer, in my opinion, you know. So, I mean, but they've got everybody convinced, you know. And then you get, I've had a job, I've been an airline pilot for all these years, and so I'm kind of sort of forced down that 401k hole.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's some tax pennies, and we could argue that. But that's just what I knew. And so you participated and you did it, right? Is there something else? Is there something else, you know? Always nagging at the back of my neck. There's something else, some other way to do this thing, right? So we get to North Carolina. We're doing business. We've got, we're doing some real estate. Lori's doing, she's a designer really by talent, you know? And so we were doing some staging and lots of different things. And we've evolved to where in North Carolina and we've got these wedding venues that we own and we're staying busy and we're trying to grow the business, because, you know, we want some financial freedom. But what happens is, once again, where are we putting all this money? You know, am I going to keep putting money into a vehicle that I can't get a hold of? You know, mm-hmm. You know, where do I get the money? How do I get it out? Can we use it? You know, for years we took loans out on our 401k all the time, mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, we were kind of sort of advised that was a no-no, but we did it anyway because it made complete perfect sense, you know, mm-hmm. And, you know, who's to say whether we did well with it? I think we've done well with it. I could show you on a piece of paper that I believe we've done well with the decisions we've made, but still, it wasn't the real freedom that we needed with our money. So I started looking, and I remember I was looking on the internet, and I saw this thing about be your own banker, okay? And I thought, be your own banker? How the heck is that going to happen, you know? So
just has a nice ring to it.
It has a nice ring to it. It really did. And so I look, and it was one of these little, I don't know if it was like a click funnel thing, but I ordered the book, and I got the book. And I don't remember what it was. I remember it was Be Your Own Banker, and it had the picture of that vault on the front, you know? And I read it, and I don't remember really what, all I remember first time I read it was that, hey, it's kind of a weird concept, you know? And then you butt up against the whole thing about whole life insurance, because you've been told all your life that term's the way to go, you know, the Dave Ramsey stuff, right? And so anyway, so you go through that process and you read it, and I put the book down, and I was just joking with Julie back there. I said, hey, you know, I don't know where that original book's probably in some thrift store somewhere, you know, because it probably got thrown out or something, you know, right. Because I was like, okay, so I let it down, right? And so a year goes by. I remember it's about a year, and I started picking up that whole, all right, we gotta figure something out with this money, because now we're getting to be successful in our business, and now I've got like money. It's like I've got a lot of money in the checking account. I can't sit there. I can't have it in the bank somewhere, you know? So what are we going to do with it? So I go back into looking at the stuff. I see it again. I see some guys talking about it on the internet, some other of the noisemakers out there. And then I order the book again and I read it. And while I'm reading it, somehow I get kind of filtered into you and what you're doing, and saw some of your videos, and it all kind of sort of came together, right? So I thought, okay, so it gave me, I read the book with a whole different set of eyes, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so I read the book, And I came to a point because I'm getting ready to retire. They're, you know, the feds force us out at 65. And, but, you know, Lori and I are.
You're barely 55. What
dude,
do you
mean? We're young, man. You know, we feel good. We feel energized, you know. I can't imagine us not doing stuff, you know, and not being not, and not just being workers, but being really principal folks that are innovators, and we're the thinking part, you know, and we're kind of leading these younger people that we've got into the future, you know. So anyways,
that's a doer in my book, you know. And I didn't, if I can interject here, sure. I didn't really give the background. I mean, a pilot, six children. They have several wedding venues, and I mean, the latest was a winery. I can't wait to talk about that. And then real estate, you know. So there's a lot there. I mean, doers, actually doers, salt of the earth people, like I said earlier. So I just want to interject that. I mean, they're doing it, right? They're doing it. Okay, sorry.
So I guess for the listeners and for everybody out there, you know, one of the things, and I'm sure there's a lot of them out there that are in the same situation I was. We had term insurance that we bought 20 years ago, right? And I got a note. It was probably last year.
Yeah.
That hey, it's coming up due, right? It's 20 years is up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I still remember when we went to the office and talked to that guy about that whole thing, you know? So it made me feel old, you know, but then it made me feel, oh my gosh, we got to do something here because I never really thought about retirement. There's no retirement. What are you going to do next? You know? Yeah. All right. We can't fly airplanes anymore, but we can run the venue. We can do the winery. There's so much out there that we're excited about and want to do, you know? So I kind of sort of came to a situation where I had some problems I needed to solve, you know, and one of the thing was I needed to solve the life insurance problem, you know, the death benefit problem, because, you know, if something happens to me, you know, I like to think I bring a lot of value to the organization, you know,
no
for the next 20 years, you know? So what is that supposed to look like? Right. Second thing is we've got this cash situation. I need to put this stuff somewhere. It ain't going in a bank.
You know, that reminds me, and I have not looked at our notes, but I think the first time or two that we spoke, I mean, you said I have these issues that I want solved. Mm-hmm. And I wrote them down. So that when you said
yeah
the life insurance and yeah. Anyway
yeah
I remember
so,
that
so life insurance, death benefit, cash, savings, somewhere to put it, right? So not just for a savings vehicle, but I need to use it, you know. Yeah. It needs to go in, needs to come out, you know, trying to keep, and this, I don't want to sound bad, but just I need to keep the government and other people out of my stuff, you know. Just needs to be out. Okay. I need to do it on my own.
Sounds like Nirvana. Not bad.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? And yes. then it needs to be a safe place.
Yeah.
Okay. It needs to be something safe. Okay. And of all the financial institutions, all the things that are out there, that I don't think there's anything that can contribute to, especially the life insurance company that you set us up with, that nothing can contribute or nothing can beat the history and the track record that any of these people have. You know, they talk about these mutual funds that, oh, it's been around 30 years, 20 years, they're making this and that percent. Yeah, well, this insurance company's been, you know, paying dividends and doing it for a lot longer than that. So maybe I need to, yeah. Maybe I need to go with a more stable individual or organization, you know, with where we're actually putting our future, you know. So we had those problems to solve, and the more I read about infinite banking, the more I read about whole life, the more I listened to you explain it, just from a realist standpoint, it absolutely made perfect sense.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.